Last time that we talked, my life looked a lot different than it does now. I was talking about getting off of Twitter to try to make more time for better things. I was talking about this new thing in my life where I had just was going through the process of buying a coffee shop, which is still happening. Nothing has changed there. And we can talk much more about that because that's a big part of the story. But a big, unexpected, crazy thing happened in my life, which is that a massive wildfire came through the area in which I live, destroying thousands of structures, including my home. And the wildfire is still destroying things in its path. I think it's the sixth largest wildfire in California history, 50% contained at this point, and not the only fire burning. You have friends that are also being impacted by another wildfire further south than the one that's hitting me. Isn't that right?
Yeah, in Mendocino.
I am slowly returning to semi-normal life in the last couple of days. The fire came through my area, I think about a week and a half ago now, but it still feels really fresh and raw, and there's still a lot of work to be done ahead of me. But the thing that I wanted to talk to you about that I think is something that I have yet to process is the way that social media and the internet in general played a massive, massive role in the entire story of this fire. And it was both incredibly great and incredibly bad all at the same time. Mm. My wife and I found out about this wildfire happening in a national park that's really close to our house. It's about a 10-minute drive from our home. And it had been burning for like 48 hours or something and just getting bigger and bigger. And one night we went and actually drove to the national park to see it. And it was pretty scary. You know, I lived in Florida, so wildfires are like completely new to me. I've never even seen a fire before, I don't think. We have hurricanes, you know, a whole different beast. And so we went and we looked at it, but it was so far away. It was this massive fire blazing on like mountains away. You could see red, but you couldn't see flame. And so we went home at night after seeing this fire thinking, wow, that's really scary, but I'm glad that it's as far away as it is. I think we're fine. But we weren't. We woke up at 4 a.m. because our house was full of smoke just, you know, 12 hours after we had gone and looked at where the fire was. And the fire wasn't far anymore. It was extremely close to our house. And the first thing I did was I reached for my phone at 4 a.m. The power was out in my house, but my phone was still alive. And I Twitter searched what was happening with the fire. It had a hashtag, and I put the hashtag in, and I found a tweet from an official account that said that the road way further in town than my house was had been completely evacuated, which meant that my house was in an evacuation zone and I needed to get out of there. As soon as I felt in danger, I could confirm that I was in danger and needed to do something about it by Twitter, which I guess is good. It wasn't a pleasant moment, but I'm thankful that I was able to use this social media tool in this way.
Yeah, not only would I say that's good, I would say that I don't know what other tool to use for something like that.
Right.
And it makes me kind of worried about not really having any, well, I mean, like I have a Twitter, I have the app downloaded. Like I could search Twitter in case like there was an earthquake in LA or something, but that actually really makes me think differently about what Twitter's for.
Right. The same thing for me, because last time that we chatted about all of this, I was feeling the toxicity of the platform kind of overwhelming me, which it does do if I'm on there day to day. But when I needed to know information quickly, even in a smaller town, Reading is like 90,000 people. It's not massive. They don't have an incredibly great social media strategy. Mm-hmm. But even still, you know, there was, I think it's Cal Fire tweeting about this fire and the sheriff's department tweeting about the fire, and information was pretty quickly accessible. So I used that to get out. My wife and I packed up as much as we could, and we left our house, and we didn't take a lot, but we took a little, and that was more than other people. We woke up at 4 and left around 5. I think our neighborhood was like officially evacuated, like by firefighters knocking on everyone's door at 6 a.m. And if you were somebody that got that knock, they did not permit you to take anything. You just had to leave immediately. Mm. So in that way, I'm thankful that I didn't just wait around, because I would have even less than I do now. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of cool, and I'm thankful for the way that it works. I will tell an inverse story, which is that the night before, actually, I found a live stream being done by the police at the fire on Facebook Live, and they had just posted this 2-hour long video of them watching the blaze, and it felt weirdly casual. Like the police officer that was doing it seemed more interested in the fact that there was like thousands of viewers than he was about the fire and like conveying information. So it wasn't extremely helpful to me to watch this video. They didn't really update me at all. I went to sleep thinking I was okay. So it's not all good news in the world of social media, especially for people that are like untrained in the mediums, I guess.
Yeah, that does seem like the problem there.
My wife and I were evacuated. A bunch of our friends ended up getting evacuated, and we all kind of sat around all day waiting to hear news. And I have never been in a room where people were more morbidly glued to their phone than that.
Where were you?
I have a shared office space with a few friends, and a bunch of people brought stuff here. I brought my stuff here, my dog here. Other people brought their animals here. We had a big Yeti cooler full of water because it was so hot and so smoky outside that we were all constantly thirsty. My friend, who has a vinyl record collection that he got from his father, brought all of his records to the office, and everyone was kind of just using this space as a space for mementos. And then we all just sat around because you don't get evacuated from your house and then work normally. No one wanted to do their normal thing. And also no one wanted to just enjoy the day. So basically everyone just sat and browsed the web for news, trying to find out where the fires were, trying to find out if their homes were affected, trying to find out if their neighbors were being evacuated, their friends were being evacuated. It was just that for the whole day. And I can think back to being in a hurricane years ago where Twitter hadn't really taken root yet. And I kind of just remember you would just have a TV station on in the background giving you as many updates as possible. But this feels a little different because it feels like everyone's in their own siloed world. When you have a TV on in the background, everyone is experiencing news at the same time. But when everyone is checking different websites or different Twitter feeds or different hashtags, it kind of changes the way that the news feels. It feels like you could get news from any place at any time and that the person beside you might have information that you don't have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm really interested in the dynamics of that.
I can't really say if everyone checking their phones was a good thing, a bad thing, or just a thing.
Well, how much sharing was going on? How much were other peers sharing information with each other?
A lot of sharing, but all of it was bad.
Bad news, you mean, or bad information?
Bad news. It just, there wasn't anything good to come out of it, and there wasn't anything that could be done about it.
Sure.
Oh, hey, the fire got bigger. Oh, the fire's in this area now. Like, that kind of stuff. It just, it created a lot of fear, but I don't necessarily know if it was wrong to do. What else was there to do, you know? It wasn't like we were all going to put our phones down and pretend nothing was happening. And I think that might have been an unsafe decision to begin with. So I don't know. I feel very conflicted about that. And I obviously don't have a definitive conclusion about how I was experiencing it. My house was by far the closest to the fire. And thankfully, and I am truly thankful for this, I was the only person in my immediate friend group that did have my house impacted by the fire. Everyone else that I know that I'm really close with, their homes are fine, which I'm thankful for because I'm staying in one of them right now. I think it was a bit hard for me too, because I knew that if there was bad news, the bad news was going to be for me. It wasn't going to be for anybody else. Even I think the way that I experienced it and processed it was probably different than everyone else who just wanted to know how close it was getting to them. Where for me, I knew that if they got news about their place, it would have officially passed mine. And it was just crazy. I mean, it was an incredibly hot, incredibly serious fire that created its own weather system, that created a quote unquote fire tornado. I mean, it was bad. So, you know, the more news that we got, the more we recognized what a situation we were in and what a situation our entire city was in. But Yeah, it was a wild experience. And eventually what we ended up all deciding to do was to leave town because the fire showed no signs of being pacified. And every house that we were going to kept getting evacuated one by one as we kept moving into town. So we all left. And even in, you know, a neighboring town in Sacramento, a couple hours south of us, we were still just glued to our phones checking the news. But I mean, I guess that's kind of the state of things, right? Like, I don't really know if I can say that I wish it wasn't that way or I'm glad it is that way. It just is. Like, that's the world that we're living in, is that we have these phones that are magical news devices and we have these social networks that are incredible news carriers. And so what else is there to do in a moment like this than to constantly check it, to be updating it by the minute, trying to find out what's happening, which is the official motto of Twitter, I believe.
Yeah. Isn't that like what the prompt is in the text box now?
What's happening? Which sounds very worried to me every time I see it.
Yeah, but this way of using Twitter as like an emergency, a source of emergency information, really puts that in a new light for me. It's like, if something's really serious isn't happening, like, why tweet about it? You know, like, why clog up the airways for people who are seeking information that they need vitally?
Yeah,
it does, though, seem to feed a compulsive need to check. I mean, I understand why everybody wants to have up to the second information when they're in a situation like that.
Yeah,
I haven't been through something like that, like caused by an act of God. You know, I haven't like seen that kind of massive emergency firsthand. But the situation from my life that this reminds me the most of is the incident at the Burn last year, just in the sense of like people's appetite for information. And it actually gives me some pause about whether checking constantly in the midst of a situation like a fire bearing down on your neighborhood is a good thing, a productive thing to do. The incident, for anybody who happened not to be reading global news for August or September of 2017, was that somebody ran into the fire at the Man Burn at Burning Man last year. And I guess I haven't talked about this that directly on the show yet, but I'm on the communications team at Burning Man. And so I was part of the response to that incident and filtering and channeling the information about what was going on out to the world and to the media. And it was the first time I'd ever been at the center of an active breaking news story like that. And to be on a communications team with that information and figuring out for ourselves how to disseminate it, that was really exciting. And I learned a lot about how the information that ends up going into people's phones and causing them to compulsively check for more, I learned about how that information originates in the middle of a big story like this. And all I can remember is just feeling like I wished that people would just go to sleep. like there we had to make definitive statements at certain times. I was like, there is no more information. We are going to sleep right now.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you in the morning. Like, this is all there is to say. And I mean, it's a different scenario because that was an incident that happened to one person. It did affect a lot of people who saw it.
Right.
And then, of course, there was a sort of ripple effect of other weird stuff happening in the city that night, kind of in reaction to it. But it wasn't a situation of ongoing imminent danger that really required much of an update. It was just like people wanting to know, people outside of the event wanting to know if their loved ones were okay. And that information was pretty slow in coming. And it really did feel like the tempo of the demand for information was putting a lot of pressure on us as the ones with the information that wasn't helping.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine that fire departments feel that way, because I'm always struck, this is not, you know, far from my first summer in California watching fires consume entire cities. And like, I'm always struck by that percentage that they give.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure this was something that was weighing on you too. Like, 13% contained or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, I realize that that is a sophisticated measurement that they're making, but how does that help? Like, was that number something that was on your mind as you were all sitting there refreshing whatever you were refreshing? And were there other like numbers or stats or things that you were hanging on like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the acreage of how big the fire was getting was the thing that we all kept being blown away by. And then that containment number, it was at like 5% contained for days and days. And that was really scary to know that.
It's so demoralizing.
It is, exactly. And I mean, I ended up kind of feeling this way eventually, that I just didn't want to know any more news until that containment number got higher.
Yeah.
Because nothing could be gained after a certain point. I kind of felt like there was a certain amount of news that was important for us to know, and then we left town, and then the number kept growing, but we knew the areas where it was going, and it was past, way past my house at that point, and now in different areas. It wasn't coming into town. And basically, for me, I thought, until that containment number goes up, I just don't want to know any more information, because what information could I possibly know that is helpful? And so I definitely hit a major fatigue point of just not wanting to know anything else until I heard some good news. And that number, that containment number, eventually started growing by the day. And that's when I started caring again, and evacuations were being lifted. And that's when I started caring again. But unfortunately, it was not good news for my house. And one of the ways that I found that out was also through social media. There was a local journalist who made it his job to drive with a GoPro in his car down every neighborhood that he could possibly get into. Residents weren't being allowed in these areas, but because he had a press pass, he was allowed to go through. And he would go into these neighborhoods that had been affected by the fire with a camera and go address by address and list out whether or not the property was still standing or not. Heartbreaking videos, right? I mean, the answer in almost every video was homes were gone, not still standing. And I was sent that video by my father, actually, who had been checking the news from Colorado. And that was partially how I learned that my house was gone. It was a bit challenging because he didn't actually verify that our house wasn't there, because our house is down this steep drive and he didn't like drive down the drive. But he said that it wasn't there anymore. And I took his word for it basically at that point, because what else am I supposed to do? That was hard to find out that way. But at the same time, I'm thankful that there was somebody that was trying to put an end to my questions and the questions that many other people were having.
So like that's the big one, I would imagine, like at the center of this entire vortex of things that you were going through and you were wondering, like, does my house still exist or not, is like the big question.
Yeah.
That's the thing I wonder the most about. It sounds like getting an answer, getting a yes or no answer, or getting a definitive answer to that question kind of helped you get to the next question.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did it do to you to learn that information?
Well, I mean, it wasn't pleasant. I really wish I would have never had to have that information delivered to me. But at the same time, there's something so strange about the purgatorial nature of being evacuated from your space and not being given any answers and not really knowing what was happening, which I totally understand. I mean, the fire was so large. It wasn't like all the firefighters were spending time on social media. Hey, just left this neighborhood. Everything's cool over here. You know, I mean, there are pictures of the firefighters sleeping in yards after they had fought fires, you know, trying to rest for a moment before getting back up and doing it again. I have a friend who's friends with a firefighter, and he talked with the firefighter's wife, and she said, yeah, I haven't seen him in like 12 days now. You know, these people were just working and trying their best to contain it and deploying so many people to try and fight this thing. So as soon as a fire moved through a neighborhood, it would go to the next one, and they didn't have the chance to update all the people who were in that neighborhood about how successful the firefighting was. But yeah, it was important for us to have some sort of closure, and that closure didn't require me to go and see it with my own eyes, which is interesting, right? I actually have yet to be out there. I think they opened my road back up to residence yesterday, And I'm in no hurry to go. But I didn't have to know whether or not it was still standing. I was able to use a Facebook post that was for me and for many others to find that information out. And I saw that Facebook post being shared on Nextdoor, which is a social media app that I have barely looked at, but ended up looking at quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. This weirdly local and often racist social media network that is very problematic, but in this moment was helpful for people who were just trying to figure out if their homes were still standing. And people were able to link them to these videos that existed or give them firsthand information that these people who had been evacuated weren't able to provide.
I was wondering if Nextdoor was going to come into play. Because like that's another app that I have installed that I only look at if I hear an explosion or something.
Yeah, exactly. Nextdoor is not particularly helpful to me.
Yeah.
I felt like I knew more than most people on Nextdoor knew. But I did see people receiving their information that way, which is good. I'm glad that they were able to use this network for their benefit. And then the actual for sure confirmation came about a day later, when a news reporter that was friends with a friend of mine was going through the neighborhood, and my friend told them to specifically go and take pictures of my house and or what was my house. And so I received pictures that way. So, I mean, this whole disaster was experienced through my phone.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it. From the day before learning about the fire and knowing where it was, to the day of being evacuated, knowing that I needed to get out of there, to learning that my house was gone. I was in LA at the time with friends. We evacuated all the way to LA to be with people that we knew. And it felt weirdly personal on a different scale because of my phone. I don't know how to say it, but I felt more in control of stuff that was out of my control because I chose to pick up my phone and look at the information. But at the same time, I wasn't in control. I felt obligated to do it. It wasn't like I could put my phone away for the day. It wasn't like any of my friends were interested in putting their phones away for the day. We were hooked. We were attached. We were addicted in a different light, in a different way than I had ever experienced before, to our own personal news machines. But I don't know. I think it's part of the process of experiencing a disaster in 2018.
Christine took to the internet to tell the story of what happened,
yeah,
to share with the world what it was like for her and what was going to happen now. And it was a really uplifting take on it. It was something that made me feel better to read. I can only imagine that it made her feel better to write it. Perhaps this conversation we're having now is your take on putting out there what the experience has been like for you.
Yeah, I mean, the other part of this, right, was the insane and honestly beautiful, but insane amount of text messages and people reaching out because of the fire. You know, I had people that I haven't spoken to in years that were texting me, you know, saying, I just learned about this. You know, I just heard that you might be impacted. I'm thinking about you. Family members that I very rarely talk to doing the same thing, texting me. Immediate family members who were probably more actively engaged in the news story than I was, you know, trying to find out information for me. Like I said, you know, my father is the one that found out that there was this video online. I had not found it, but he had, you know. I don't know how he had. Honestly, I haven't asked him that question, but there was a lot of people who were asking how we were and also wanting to know what was happening because, you know, some of my immediate family knew that, and close friends knew that our house was gone, but a lot of people were kind of left hanging saying, I hope you're okay. Are you, you know? And I tried to sit down and process it and write a couple of times, and I had a hard time doing it. My wife is much better at that than I am. And so Christine wrote this really beautiful article explaining the story from the start to the finish. And the finish, for people who have not read the article, is that we're just being resilient as we can. And as we had mentioned on the previous show, I'm in the process of buying a coffee shop in this town. And thankfully, that building was completely unaffected by the fire. And we had to make the decision, do we move forward with this or do we not, even if we're homeless? And we decided to move forward with it. So on the day that we figured out we lost our house, we continued. And when we drove back home from LA to a place where we had no real residence, we officially closed on the property. And we are moving forward and we're staying around and we're not getting kicked out of the city that we really care about.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it was convenient. I think that you probably have this same feeling as someone who writes missives that go to a lot of people, but it felt remarkably good to have something published that I could now link to a million people at once. You know, I had all of these lingering text messages of people saying, let us know what's happening. And I just sent that link to lots and lots of people. And then also when we published it, you know, we heard from people who had not reached out saying, you know, I've been thinking about you, but I didn't want to reach out to burden you. I'm so thankful that you guys are okay, even in the midst of all of this. So it feels good to be able to have ownership of your story because of these mediums. And absolutely, that's what I feel like I'm doing right now is I've wanted to process my own experience and share that with the world. And this is me doing that. And I'm really thankful because there's a friend that actually just got back in town today. But there's a weird thing about somebody coming into your story days and days or weeks later after you've been processing it with other people. Mm-hmm. It feels pretty draining to have to constantly like retell your story and redo your thing every time that you see somebody. So I can't imagine if I had to pick up the phone and call every family member and every friend and explain what's been going on. And I mean, it felt great to be able to have this story that I feel like very much represents what I've been going through too, published by Christine, that can work as a catch-all for those people who have just been asking for updates.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that either my wife or I really wanted to publish anything while we still felt down and out. And I'm thankful that we were able to have a glimmer of hope pretty soon after we had experienced this big loss and publishing a story that has hope at the end of it, that has meaning at the end of it, that has something to look forward to at the end of it was really good for us.
Yeah. I just wrote about this on Grindwell this morning, actually. Like this very idea of crystallizing an experience into story that then exists as an object that can be pointed to.
Yeah.
And it helps to move past what happened, but it also helps to integrate what happened into the longer story. And then, of course, there's that useful element of being able to just send somebody a link instead of having to kind of reopen the wound of telling the whole story again. This is like it seems to me to be an unambiguous improvement in our quality of life that we can now create these story objects that we can put the work into one time, make it the truest reflection we possibly can of what we have gone through and what it means.
Yeah.
And we can wait till that moment of being able to say, and here's what's going to happen now to sort of close the book on it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hard sometimes for me. And I want to know if this is true for you, to say, just go read this thing. Like, I can't explain, like, just go read this post that I wrote or whatever it is. But maybe it's different because of how exhausting of a thing you've gone through. People, I'm sure, are very understanding of, like, you not wanting to talk about it too much. And maybe in the case of some people, like the ones you mentioned, who didn't want to reach out, which I didn't really know what to do myself. You know, when I first started hearing that Reading was in trouble, I was messaging you, but I was trying really hard not to like distract you. And I'm sure for a lot of people who didn't know, like you mentioned, who didn't know whether or how to reach out, that having something to click on and read really helps fast forward through the finding out part and get straight to figuring out how to talk to you now on the other side.
Yeah, it is interesting. I didn't really ever feel burdened by people reaching out to me. And I felt a lot of generosity and kindness. I do get that, though. It is a strange thing, right? Like, how close am I and how well is this person doing? And is the text going to be a good thing or a bad thing? An old friend that I don't really speak with often anymore sent me this long, incredibly beautiful text that basically the first paragraph of it was him saying what you just said, you know, like, I wanted to reach out, but I didn't. And also, I didn't know if that'd be good for you. And also, it was really tiring for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do, but I don't want to wait any longer. And here's a text, you know, and I think that I totally feel how strange that can be and how challenging that can be to determine whether or not to say something going through something hard. There were a few people who can send kind of unhelpful things. I think the worst thing is just people that ask like too much of you, too many questions that don't have answers yet. And I mean, I don't think that anyone's doing that out of a bad place, nor do I think that it's like so problematic that I am now mad at those people. But I think that just saying I'm thinking of you means a lot. It meant a lot to me. I would say that you talked about distraction, and I was actually very happy to have distraction in this last season.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this once before, this social platform once before, but I have never used it more than I have in the last week or two. And that platform is Reddit, because my God, Reddit is the most distracting, time-wasting, nothing-happening social network I've ever been a part of. And the ability for me to open to click a button that would just show me GIFs of puppies and like weird, dumb stuff happening was very relieving in this time when everything felt super heavy and sad. So I think that my time on Reddit is now done. But that was actually the button I probably clicked on my phone more than anything once I had gotten news fatigue, was I just want to look at something dumb right now. Show me the most popular posts on Reddit. And that was actually very helpful.
There's phases to any kind of, you know, situation. And, you know, at the beginning, the thing I was worried about doing by texting you was like interrupting you while you were coordinating evacuation or something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But like the release of like getting of being done with that, being safe again, like I can totally relate to the desire to just like melt your brain afterwards.
That's really what I wanted to do, and I did it.
Yeah.
To jump back to Twitter really quick, a weird bad thing that Twitter needs to figure out is the fact that there were lots of very strange sponsored posts in hashtag carfire, which is the hashtag that I was constantly looking at. And I bring that up not really to say anything about it, but just to say that it was extremely strange to see a sponsored ad in the middle of these horribly tragic and terrible news posts. And I'm sure that if we looked at any of these hashtags, you know, on the official Twitter app, you could probably see that happening. And I'm surprised that they have not figured that out yet.
Ugh. God, Twitter.
If you clicked on any of those sponsored ads, it was many, many, many tweets replying to that ad saying, get this out of this hashtag, because I'm sure I wasn't the only one seeing that. And that felt very strange. Also, spam. There are these, you know, terrible bot tweets trying to sell something or whatever that just must, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I know the type. They automatically detect like a trending like level of activity and they hit it.
Yeah, they must just scrape the best hashtags or whatever and add those to their tweet, which was very strange to see that too, you know, like a weird, almost like pornographic tweet or something in the middle of these really, really sad disaster response tweets that has 70 hashtags attached to the back of it. I think it was you that said it a while ago that like Twitter feels old, but it's still a baby. Mm-hmm. I thought of your comment on that a lot when I would see things like that. Like that is not a mark of a thriving, mature platform.
Yeah, the spam issue is just unbelievable. I mean, the porn, like porn is definitely the thing. Like there's anytime we do anything at Burning Man with that involves hashtags, we have to just sort of monitor for porn, you know, and like report accounts, and it doesn't do anything, and all, you know, that's all. The problem with that situation is that the senders have no interest whatsoever in whether the people receiving the message like it or not. The promoted tweets thing is trickier, and because, you know, no advertiser in their right mind wants to be associated with disaster or like pissing people off whose houses are burning down. The thing about that situation is that I imagine that Twitter does have that flag, that they do pull ads out of hashtags. They just, it just, those hashtags have to rise to the level of like getting the attention of some specific tech bro in San Francisco when he's at the office.
Right.
And like that probably happens on the scale of like global catastrophes, but there is surely just a threshold that's way too high because of lack of moderation resources that lets people get through. That's just the kind of lack of seriousness, of commitment to like community standards that we've come to know late period Twitter for.
Yeah.
Is just that not giving the attention to the things that actually really affect people's feelings. And you know damn well that they're going to use the statistics about the volume of tweets in that hashtag in some presentation about how awesome and relevant Twitter is in disasters. And it's going to include, you know, hundreds of people yelling at advertisers as part of their tweet volume.
Yeah.
It's still like changing my attitude about Twitter profoundly, though, to think about the role that it played in this for you. And like, I guess right now I have two Twitter accounts. I have one that is basically just squatting on my username that I liked too much to get rid of. And I happen to have it hooked up to automated things that post like stuff I'm reading and stuff I'm writing, but it's not following anything. And then I have the account for my meditation blog, which isn't really following anything either. And I guess we have the same thing that you run for this show. And so the Twitter accounts that I have, I mean, there's like the one with my name on it is a weird edge case, but like it's just information sources at this point. And there's something kind of pure about that idea of Twitter as like just sources of information, sharing their information, and then getting a sense of like what's really what's happening out there
yeah.
from it, instead of just like blather, just moment to moment, you know, like the what's happening inside of people's heads,
yeah.
you know, is the stuff that I no longer have any interest in seeing. But like, this makes me wonder, like, should I start following local news accounts from my Ablaze Twitter handle for the moment when I need to open Twitter and see what's going on right around me? Like, that's kind of an interesting idea. I mean, it feels like maybe there should be more specialized applications or news sources for this.
But there aren't.
Rather than having to build your own with Twitter, but there really aren't. And like, Twitter has just sort of become the pipe that any agency will use to share its official statements. And, you know, I guess there's something kind of truly web 2.0 about building it yourself out of the tools that a company like Twitter makes available. I don't want to really be bothered with ads for Pampers and pornographic videos while I'm trying to like find out if my house burned down.
Part of the real draw of Twitter for me has always been the epic moment of something shifting.
Uh-huh.
I honestly think that's part of why I go on there, is in case something happened today. And weirdly, this moment has created a shift in what I actually consider news I want to follow, because I realized, oh yeah, there are big things that happen that I do need this for, and that does not include a celebrity death
yeah.
or something along those lines, which is what you see on Twitter almost every day. So weirdly, what this has done for me has made me appreciate the network more and also feel much less interested in participating in it. I think that that endless cycle of having to respond to something feels a lot less critical now that I've been through something that actually did require responses. Like, I tweeted at one point to a person who was asking whether or not they needed to evacuate, and I was able to tell them, you know, that is a good tweet
yep.
that I'm really thankful that I tweeted. And even this news, you know, being able to share with people that have followed me and cared for me, that this article was written, you know, about my story. And there were several people who reached out to me that saw it because of the tweet or because I posted it on Facebook that wouldn't have otherwise known what I was going through. So I see it as a different kind of network now, even though that's probably not what Twitter intends it for. That's what it's become for me. It's like, I'm thankful for it on a macro level and I'm uninterested in it on a micro level. I don't really think it's going to take up as much of my time anymore, at least in this season. Because, I don't know, it has shifted my perspective.
One more thing I want to ask you about the shop and the plan and the way that that fits into the local rebirth that's happening right now. Are there ways in which this fire is now propelling the project that you're working on, which at its heart, I think you've been very clear, was like a civic revitalization effort, and now there's a lot more revitalization to happen in your city. Does what happened propel this project in a new way or in a new direction?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, so my wife and I purchased this building, and it's two apartments upstairs. I don't know if I'd said that on the last episode or not, but it's more than a coffee shop. It's two apartments upstairs and a coffee shop that has an office beside it, and we're planning on expanding the coffee shop into that office and making it even larger.
Yeah.
And part of the whole thing was, you know, we want to create this space for people that are both locals and people that are coming into the town, this third space that they can meet and talk and share. And Christine had mentioned it in her article. Coffee Bar, which is the name of the coffee shop, is the place that we went when we were evacuated. Like, that's where we went to go be for the morning, and we saw a lot of other people there that had done the same thing. So I really see these third spaces, these spots like a coffee shop, as very important to cities when they're going through something hard. And I want that to be even more true in the future. My wife and I got some cards printed that are for people that have lost their homes, and also the firefighters and disaster relief workers that's going to give them free coffee throughout the rest of the year. And we want to just do as much good as we can with this space. And people that have been impacted like we have deserve a nicety given to them and part of their routine back. So we want to do things that make it even more like home for people that may not have them right now or have just gone through something hard, and create a space in this city that has now gone through something really big together to be a worthwhile place to be and to talk and to share. So yeah, for as much as my story of evacuating played out online, my story of returning is playing out in person and is playing out in a very physical way. And I want to spend a lot of time with people one-on-one and giving to people on a one-to-one basis. And I don't know exactly how that's all going to play out in the future, but I'm excited to see the way that this space, which we are renaming Evergreen, which is even also kind of a beautiful planting metaphor in this season of a lot of burning and then regrowth. I want to see how Evergreen can be a big part of the city that we're trying to be a part of the reshaping.